This is Brock and Salk.
Brock Huard is my hero.
Jay Buhner just punched me in the kidney.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
On Seattle Sports.
Well, we're going to do you on the interview.
Don't really work that way, Sherm. This is a show that has my name on it.
It kind of does, though.
Brought to you by Simply Seattle.
Now here are your hosts, Brock Huard and Mike Salk.
Hello!
Yeah, anytime you have a new coaching staff, anytime you expect a little bit of roster turnover, anytime you have eyes on a new group of players that are going to view them differently than maybe the last group did and without some of the same skin in the game, You do wonder about roster turnover and the way that new coaching staff views some of the players, especially in cases where maybe they've been a little bit up and down. Do they think, hey, this is somebody we can work with, as Brady suggested, this coaching staff may feel about the edge players on this team? Like, hey, maybe they like them a little bit more than other people do and think that there is something for Boye Mafe and a little bit more in Derek Hall than we've seen. Or maybe they do think that Dre Jones is going to be more effective on the edge, especially on early downs. Okay. But then what about cornerback? Because they did draft two, and as Brady said, not necessarily a position of great need on paper.
On paper, it is not. I think what we're going to find here through the OTA season and in the training camp, Salk, that position, as much as any on this team, is going to be asked to do different things than their predecessors, than themselves with the previous coaching staff, right? A lot of zone coverage, a lot of stay on top, a lot of don't give up the big play. Not a ton of press man coverage, not a ton of blitz and pressure in getting after the quarterback, which does what? Burdens your corners. And you got to have guys that can play man. I mentioned the name DJ Durkin. For college football fans, they remember that name, and it could be familiar. He's been a coordinator at a bunch of spots at a really high level at Michigan, at Texas A&M. He's now the coordinator down there at Auburn. When he was the head coach of Maryland, they had the tragedy with the player that passed away during the conditioning test, and that was a tough deal and lawsuits and all that ugliness of it. But DJ is a in-your-face press man attack mode. And that's the way, that's his nature, and that's the way that his teams play, and that's how he coordinates. And probably shouldn't be a surprise that you take, or if you read between the lines a little bit, you take two corners that come out of that program who played a lot of press man coverage. Is Mike Jackson a press man cover corner in this league? Probably not. Probably not one of his great strengths. Is Trey Brown a press man at his size, you know, man corner in this league? Probably not. Is Woolen? Can Woolen be a press man? You sure hope so. You would think so, running 4.3.
Strength, right?
Yeah, but you've got to be physical, and you got to have tenacity, and you got to be physically freaking tough.
Yeah.
And those are some real question marks for Woolen last year and a big step
back.
There's
a good text here. 425 says, Mike Jackson's a journeyman backup. Trey Brown's a nickel that wants to play boundary. The depth at cornerback isn't as good as it may seem.
Agreed.
I would say those two rookie cornerbacks from Auburn, barring injury, are going to push very hard. I tend to agree with that.
Agreed.
And it does not make me think any less of what I said last week, which is if they take a quarterback in the first round, I'd vomit. But taking one in the fifth and sixth rounds? Absolutely. I think this was something they needed to do.
Yeah, and I would also read between the lines a little bit even further here on a couple things. Number one, when I texted DJ the day of the draft saying, hey, man, you mocking the Seahawks a corner at number 16. Is this gut? Is this instinct? And it was, no, I just know very firmly the Seahawks have done a ton of work at corner.
Mm-hmm.
And that tells you that, you know, this regime, looking at the roster, to your point there that you opened with, didn't have the love affair with those corners at the previous staff.
And if that's gotten out to DJ, it's because somebody didn't have a problem with that getting out to DJ.
That's right. So,
right? Like, so if that got out, there's some messaging that they don't mind getting out. I'm not saying DJ's being used, but I mean, like, if somebody really doesn't want something out, it doesn't have to get out.
So here's the likelihood of what would have happened. If they would have made that trade with Green Bay and, you know, Brady doing all of his homework, having great resources and sources and inside and intel and everything else, kind of laid out the four different scenarios. If they would have traded with Green Bay and they'd gone down to whatever that was, 25 or 26, and then also gotten 58, they would have got a premium guard there at 58. They would have maybe gotten the guy that they were very fond of, and I was very fond of
K-State
there. Yep, that could have happened. And then 25, the best player would have been a corner. best player would have been one of these guys that John Schneider said after the draft on that night. Like Detroit and Philly got great players, got players that would have been 10, 12, 14, 16 in previous drafts. And that would have been certainly the belief and the thought. So would you have walked away in this draft with a top corner and a top guard, or ultimately what they decided? And I think the right move is you just can't pass on difference-making big men. Mm-hmm. You can wait for other drafts to get corners. You can wait for other opportunities, and you may have to do that in the later rounds and take guys. And listen, Pritchett and DJ have issues. That's why they were in the fifth and sixth round, right? They got some challenges. I think for Pritchett, it's, you know, fourth fastest 40 time of all the corners. But change of direction, you know, smooth in and out, tracking, all those things, a little bit limited. And for DJ, he's a smaller guy. He's Trey Brown. He's 6 foot and 175 pounds. He's not the biggest guy, but he does love to play press.
It is interesting. If they had done that with Green Bay and traded down to 25,
yep,
the two corners would have been off the board.
Both of them would have been gone.
If everything had played out the same, and who knows if it would have, but if everything else played out the same, the guy from Toledo, Quinyon Mitchell, he went at number 22 in a fit of anger and depression. And then Terry
Detroit
Arnold
came up, right? Detroit came up
to
in
24.
The draft to 24.
Yep,
wow.
And drafted Terry Arnold. So at that point, here are some of the players that would have been available for you at 25. Jordan Morgan went 25, tackle out of Arizona. Nope. Graham Barton, the Duke kid, went 26.
That'd have been real high.
Darius Robinson, who you said was a huge reach at D end, at 27.
Nope.
Xavier Worthy, a wide receiver, I'd vomit at 28.
Yep.
Tyler Guyton, offensive tackle from Oklahoma, at 29.
Nope.
Nate Wiggins, another cornerback at Clemson, went all the way down to 30.
Yep.
Ricky Pearsall was 31, the wide receiver, no chance. Wide receiver, Leggett at 32.
Yep.
Coleman, another wide receiver with an unbelievable press conference, by the way, at 33. Another wide receiver, 34, Ladd McConkey.
Yes.
And then finally, all the way down to 35 for the guy that Joel Klatt mentioned to us, Ruka Roro. That's or Johnny Newton at 36.
Yep. Yeah.
I'm pretty glad they did what they did.
Oh, my gosh. If you had done that and they had taken those two corners and Detroit would have one-upped you, like you one-upped them the year before with Devin Witherspoon, right? You took them right there before they wanted him desperately, and they would have taken one of those two elite corners, Saul, it would have been a mess.
Well, I wonder if at that point they would have tried to trade out of that pick as well and really tried to add another, you know, second or third rounder at that point and try to get better that way. But, God, don't you just love what they did instead of that?
Yes, knowing that that is the risk you take when you're going to trade down that far, that sure, you do get a 58, but you could lose out because you don't know if others are going to come up and swoop them from.
Yeah, if they'd been able to stay in the top 21, you kind of look at it and say, okay, after they took Murphy, it was Dallas Turner, Amarius Mims, Jared Verse, Troy Faltano, Chop Robinson.
Yes.
So a lot of guys where you would have been like, okay, those are all dudes. Yep. All right, maybe they didn't like Mims or you didn't like Mims as much, but okay, fine. That's another four or five guys where you're like, okay, those are dudes.
Yep.
After that, falls off real hard, and you do have the two corners, but without them, and I really just would have been pretty unhappy if they'd gone corner instead of defensive tackle in that spot.
Right.
So
that's right.
I like what they did. I you know, I'm not a draft grader, and I'm not going to sit here and give them an A, B, C, although I did read through a lot of the drafts, draft analysis, and the Seahawks are all over the board. The worst I saw was a B-, the best I saw was an A. Mm-hmm. Everyone, for the most part, sort of had them in the B-plus range, which is, again, solid. And I'm sure
from a value, there was a Warren Sharp did a pretty good job on just value, trying to find value of in looking at curating all of these mock drafts and all of the
what did he see?
Yeah, and they were like 12th in value.
Yeah,
you know,
like, that sounds about right. Like a B plus type of a draft. They didn't do anything like, oh my gosh, they got away with murder. That's incredible. And they didn't do anything where you're like, I don't know about all that.
Yep.
What they did do, and what I feel much more qualified to judge, certainly not qualified to judge whether they got the right players, but they sure seem to have the right strategy. Mm-hmm. They sure seem to have the right idea about trying to build the type of team they say they want. Yep. And it looks like they took steps to do that. So I certainly am not going to complain one bit about what they did and how they handled their draft. Good stuff, Brock. And if I am a cornerback on this team, starting with Tariq Woolen, but yep. absolutely including Mike Jackson and Trey Brown and anybody mm-hmm. else, mm-hmm. I got my eyes wide open about the two kids that they brought in the fifth and sixth round from Auburn. All right, let's come right back with everything you need to know, including the series wins that just keep piling up. Are we expecting another? A fifth straight? It's next on Brock and Salk.
Need to know.
15 minutes past every hour with Brock and Salk.
Here's what you need to know. Up first.
Well, the Atlanta Braves are coming to town now for a three-game series. They have the best record in baseball and have really been good so far this year. They kind of are just well-built in every conceivably way. Won a World Series recently and are going to probably battle the Dodgers to see who makes it from the National League this year. But you're hot as well, and specifically because of your pitching. Mariners pitching has been unreal for the course of almost the last 3 weeks now.
Yeah.
Brock, what they're doing is historic, and it's all five guys in the rotation. It's the bullpen, which has been excellent as well. I think that the start George Kirby had on Saturday, you know, I should check on this. You remember how the shove report, Luis had a perfect shove report against Toronto in the playoffs?
Mm-hmm.
I wonder if George had a perfect shove report on Saturday. In fact, I'm going to send a text while you're talking
and see if
I can find out what George's shove report was for Saturday.
Yeah, the numbers, I mean, they're just historic. As Gary Hill is tweeting them out, as Mariners, you know, organization is putting out these numbers over these 15, 16 starts of quality starts of two earned runs or less. I mean, you got to go back to like the start of the ERA, like in the 19th century. Like it was just, it's just been an amazing run. Hey, George Kirby looked like, honestly, Saturday night, he looked like Greg Maddux throwing 99. Like if Greg Maddux, yep. with his pinpoint control and his amount of movement and everything else, if Greg Maddux could throw 99. Remember John Smoltz joining us before the season began. You know, there were some comps, some early comps of Kirby and Smoltz, and John's like, no, this dude way more advanced than me. He talked about his mechanics being in order, feeling great going out there that night, and man, did he ever shove it.
Yeah, he really did. Scott was pretty impressed.
Yeah, like I said, 23 swings and misses on the fastball tonight. That's electric stuff. You just don't see that in this league, especially with the velocity nowadays and the way guys train. They're ready for a velo. They know what George Kirby's going to go out and do against him. And still to get it done like that, very impressive.
They do lose yesterday. Bats went silent for really the last seven innings of that game. And it's too bad. They wasted a really nice start from Logan Gilbert, who just kind of kept it all rolling. But yeah, they beat the D-backs after beating the Rangers. Those are the two participants in last year's World Series. And now you got another test with Atlanta in town. Miller, Hancock, Castillo in line for the three starts against the Braves.
Here's the second thing you need to know.
Draft class is set, and the Seahawks did a good job, at least as far as I can tell. I don't know whether each of these players is going to live up to their upside potential or whether there'll be some busts in here, but at least in terms of the thought process behind doing what they did, mm-hmm. no complaints from me. I love it.
Yeah, if you're a roster construction guy, which is Salky's MO, man, you love it. Don't tell me what you're going to do. Show me what you're going to do. And if you say you want to be this kind of team and you want to play to this kind of style, then you better put the resources into it. And with Murphy and with Haynes and their top two picks, Salk, two out of the top 81, that's what they got, man. Two really powerful men right there in the center of the action, in the center of the line of scrimmage, that has been one of the vulnerable points and vulnerable parts of this team for a number of years.
Well, you mentioned some of the other folks, and I know you really like what they did in the late round here with Satoa Laumea. We've played some of his sound, but here's what John Schneider said about him.
What do we like about him? He's huge. He's tough, really aggressive. Again, you guys hear this all the time, but like, boy, I can't believe he was still available. Like, that was one of those guys, like, okay, you're waiting, and it's like, keeps coming, and, you know, he's been primarily a right-side player. He's played right guard, right tackle, but size, length, you know, again, another dude that had a really nice Senior Bowl week and competed at a high level, so, yeah, and Dave said he had a really fun press conference with you guys, so it's great.
It's not been...
No, go ahead.
No, it's not been unheard of in football history, by the way, for guys drafted at the same position later in the draft to overcome their first, second, third, fourth round mates. That move was applauded by most in the draft community and the draft Knicks from a value standpoint. Sitting there, he was a guy that many thought may go in the second round, and they get him at 81 there in the third round. But Laumea is going to push, man. He's got a wealth of experience, too. He was an all-conference performer. He was the bell cow on a terrific offensive line the last couple years at Utah. And I've said this before, I'll say it again, man, violence. Give me guys that like collisions, that like car wrecks, that like violence. He runs into them. He never, ever runs away
from them. I like some of the things that are deemed weaknesses in the NFL. Like, oh, he's a right side player his whole life. So, you know, nobody ever really thought anything of him. I was just reading through the corners like, didn't play any nickel. Only played nickel. Man, some of the things that they find to be nitpicky about are really unbelievable. And I think that they don't.
Here's the third thing you need to know.
At times, any idea what they're talking about. That one's on me. Sorry about that, Frank. A little updating to do. Brian Wu, second start, rehab start over the weekend. Nasty again. Got up to 49 pitches. Hasn't allowed a run in either of those two starts. Got to get to 85 in the next one and then take it from there. No real rush, right? I mean, they're getting what they've wanted and more out of Emerson Hancock. So we'll see where that goes. Unfortunately, don't love the news on Matt Brash. Shut down indefinitely after his last bullpen led to discomfort afterwards. It's not trending well. I mean, it's already May, and then you're going to have to shut him down for probably a month. By the time he starts ramping up again, I mean, that's kind of feeling like if he pitches this year at all, it's not going to be until August or so.
Correct. After the All-Star game at a minimum, and that's probably best case scenario. And I think with Wu here, what you learn in these lessons is it's not even the ramping up. It's not even the night of. How does he feel today? How does he feel the day after? Because that's what got Brash. He was ramping up. His stuff was electric. He was up to 99 in his sessions down there in Arizona, but it was the recovery after that. I was like, oh, this just does not feel right. I'm just not bouncing back. None of this feels good. None of this feels normal. The scan the last time around, Salk, they didn't really see anything, right, in the flexor bundle or the UCL or anything. I'm sure they will dig a little bit deeper this time around and just really try to figure out what in the world is going on with him just not recovering and feeling good in any way about that arm.
Rashad Penny, you ready for the reunion, Brock?
No, I am not. John,
why? Why wouldn't I still, of all the things, I don't understand people's objection to this. He was a pretty productive running back.
I don't understand the fascination that you have with him.
Because he's productive whenever he plays.
Yeah.
And you're not asking
him to come. Words.
Because this isn't, hey, do you think we should bring Rashad Penny back and count on him to start? It's, do you think as a fourth running back on this team and maybe running back some kicks, which he's good at, and would be helpful in this new style of run back, maybe bring in a guy who, whenever he's healthy, he's been really good.
Maybe.
Well, maybe. Apparently the Seahawks think a little closer to me than a little closer to you on this one. It's everything you need to know, 1:15 every hour here on the Brock and Salk Show. I don't understand why the hatred.
I don't have the hatred.
Yes, you do. You, Moore, and Justin, all three of you.
I don't think it's hatred at all. I think if we just know how much you do love it.
And so you're just tweaking. Yes. You're just getting under my skin.
It's a little bit, yeah.
Absolutely. Or you're just getting under my skin.
Yeah. Okay. Oh, yes.
Well, that's it. That's fine. You can do that all you want.
Speaking of, you
wouldn't want Rashad Penny on a nothing deal as your fourth running back, you're crazy. Sure.
Okay.
You'd be crazy.
Speaking of under the skin.
You would be absolutely crazy. What is Rashad Penny's career rushing average?
Will you let Justin speak? Don't worry about it. Who cares?
What do you believe is Rashad Penny's
4.8.
career 4.6. rushing yards per attempt?
4.6.
Justin?
5.3.
Neither of you got it. 5.6 yards per attempt in his career.
Oh, that's crazy.
That is actually pretty crazy, right?
That is really high.
It's really freaking high. 46 yards per, or I'm sorry, 5.6 yards per attempt. That's pretty awesome. Good. So 348 attempts in his career.
348?
348 attempts, about 1,000.
Okay, get to the good stuff, Justin.
Under the skin, do we get a hammy update for the people who have just tuned in, who are asking me all weekend at the ballpark, Brock? I was just getting people running up to me. He's like, ha, saw the video.
Yeah. It's improving.
How hurt is Salk?
I was very hurt on Thursday. I was very hurt on Friday.
Don't touch me. Don't touch me.
Once I realized
Don't
on
touch
Friday,
me, bro.
No, because I was worried where you were
Don't
trying to stick your
finger. Don't tase me, bro. Don't tase me, bro.
Once I learned that I was that it had not like fallen off the bone and it wasn't like in serious danger of needing surgery.
You didn't go to the doctor, did
I did
you?
Not. I didn't need to. There's no bruising, of course, since I don't bruise. And it was improving by Friday. Saturday felt even better. Yesterday about the same. So I would say it's okay. It's going to be okay. I'm going to survive this.
Questionable or doubtful?
For what? For what? For my vacation on Friday, I'm a go. If I were to be asked to do anything athletic in the next 2 weeks, I would say doubtful. I would be listed as doubtful right now, not even questionable.
Don't tase me, bro!
A virtual certainty that I would not play. We'll come right back. We'll wrap things up on Brock and Salk, CL Sports on 710.
Brock and Salk.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
On Seattle Sports and the Seattle Sports app.
I mean, I understand that spam is like the new thing and the scams are everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
But I got a text this morning from an unknown number that says, let's go to the club to swim together after get off work today.
After get off work?
Yeah.
Okay.
That's a brazen assumption that I belong to a club and I'm going swimming after work, don't you think?
Someone that cares about you, Saul.
Friend, yeah.
Appreciate that.
They know you pulled your hammy. It's good for you.
Yeah, it's good rehab for the hammy. It's, you know, low.
The way I think of scams and spam like that is you're trying to reach as large an audience as possible, but this one's very specific. Like, oh, the club, huh? Like,
you got thrown into an elite spam category.
Must have, yeah. Somebody out there must think that I belong to some sort of an elite club and might be a type of person who goes swimming after work. So I guess I kind of appreciate that. Thanks a lot, 947. That's nice of you. Yeah.
It turns out I think many people's favorite part of that entire video, Salk, was not watching you hurt yourself.
It feels like it was.
Although that was pretty funny.
I'm so glad I could amuse you. I'm so glad I could be here for you to really amuse you.
It was so amazing that in real time, everybody there, Buckaloo, me, we all thought you were faking it.
That would have been great if I was.
Like in real time.
If only. I had been.
But then to go back and look at the video, oh gosh.
I mean, you can see I reached for it in significant pain.
Yeah, I think it was 4 strides after you winked at the camera.
Because I winked and then was like, okay, now I'm going to turn it on. Like I've already won this race. Now I'm going for me time. Like I'm now going to like shut up the doubters, shut up the haters and really show what I can do and like get closer to that 30-second mark.
The universe had other plans.
And instead, the moment I tried to, you know, it's not 0 to 30 that's the problem. It's 30 to 60, right? Yes. And or in this case, like, you know, 5 to 7. And when I tried to turn it on. It didn't go. It kind of went the other direction. So that that really hurt. So that was people's favorite part?
I think
wink.
So. But then also the, don't touch me, bro.
Well, here's the thing. That's about you more than it's about me. I know people think that's about me.
No, it's about you.
No, it's not. That's only because they don't know you and how annoying you are.
Totally about you.
Nope. They don't know you.
That's why Betsy and her girlfriend were totally giggling.
Yep. And her sister. Everybody. Yes. Like, they got into like a hysterically like a crying laughing point when you were like, don't touch me.
That's because they don't know Brock.
I'm asking you to stop touching me. Please
stop
touching
me. That's because they don't know Brock. If they knew Brock.
I think it was about your tone, Salk.
Yes, because they don't know you. They haven't spent 15 years with you coming over. And like putting your giant fingers deep into my neck and my back and my ribs and my, and like
your ribs.
Yes. You don't know boundaries and you touch people in a way that is quite frankly inappropriate and more than anything hurts. And I was not ready for that in the moment because I had actually hurt myself. Right. And I thought that you were still under the impression that I was joking. Mm-hmm. And I was very clearly not joking.
No, you weren't.
I decided the best thing to do was to try to play Cam Newton and just take the towel, put it over the head and hide and like Newton in panic.
Salk's just happy that the Byron Murphy interview has just a few more YouTube views than the race does.
I actually would say it has fewer YouTube views than I thought it would. It's at like, 10,000, something like that?
Something like that.
I kind of thought it would have a lot more YouTube views than
the
that.
Race?
Yeah. The big race. Yeah, it's just based on how many people have reached out and mentioned it and hopefully gotten a chuckle out of me getting my comeuppance even while destroying Maura in a race.
Okay, so
by the way, not even in all week out of sheer embarrassment. Yeah. She just couldn't even come back to work. It was so awful how badly she lost that race that she won't even show up at work for a
week. Show her face.
Sad.
Okay, so Salky, you have
quite
asked
frankly sad.
In 10 minutes you have asked me and 9 minutes to rank these draft picks, the 8 of them, in my order of 5 to 1. Right now, can you rank the Mariners starting rotation? right now, if you had to put in order the Mariners starting rotation, whatever way you want to rank it, whether that's their performance, whether that, I mean, right now, Logan is second in the American League in whip. He leads the American League in innings pitched. I think he's right there leading the American League in strikeouts with 44. I mean, it's just been an unbelievable month.
I guess what I would say, if I had to rank them, I think they have the order right.
I think they still have the order right.
And I obviously, Luis got off to a slow start, but you've seen his last couple starts, what it is he's capable of and why he's such a glue to the rotation. Mm-hmm. Kirby's had probably some of the worst starts on the team this year, but also what we saw Saturday was legitimately one of the best starts I've ever seen from any pitcher. Certainly in a generation. I mean, now these days where you're not getting the like Roger Clemens, Pedro Martinez, Randy Johnson, nine inning, you know, dominating, you know, 18 strikeout type performances for this generation of pitchers. That's about as good as it gets.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if it was a perfect shove score. I asked somebody with the Mariners and they said, honestly, it was so good. I forgot to look. Mm. Like it was such an unbelievable start that I didn't even notice the shove score. So, okay. I George is capable of that. In terms of consistency, it's been Logan.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I guess you could kind of, honestly, to me, that's like 1A, 1B, 1C.
Yep.
And I would still put Bryce Miller a tick behind.
Aren't they all legitimately ones? Aren't all three of those guys?
Aren't those three of those
legitimately? It'd be interesting to go look at every other roster and see the other 29 teams in baseball and see if Logan or Kirby would be their number one.
I would say any of those three guys would probably be the number one on, let's call it 10 or 15 teams.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think it's more than that because there are a lot of really good pitchers out there. You know what I mean? There's a Spencer Strider and there's a, you know,
there
you
was.
Just kind of go. Yeah, there
and
was.
There was, and there was right. Garrett Cole and there was a Bieber.
All right, but I guess I'm still looking at their roster, not just who they have left right now, because I don't want to get into that because who knows how long these guys go.
Who is it tonight? Freed for Atlanta?
I think it's Freed, who's really good also. I mean, like, there are a lot of really good pitchers out there.
Yep.
I think that you still have it right. If you wanted to tell me that Logan is 1A, Kirby's 1B, Castillo's 1C, okay. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't think I'd fight you on it. I would still say that very clearly Miller is a step behind those guys. Mm-hmm. Obviously, he's got tremendous stuff and he's growing into it. But a team with a really good plan like Texas had last week, I think is still going to find ways to force him to throw a lot of pitches and get him out earlier.
Mm-hmm.
And as much as I like Hancock, I mean, you got to see more of it to really believe it long term.
Yep.
But I love what he did this past outing. Honestly, that was my favorite outing of his because he found ways to just get ground balls.
Three
double plays.
Ground out, double play inducing pitches like inning after inning after inning.
That's legit. But it also, you know, we had a lot of traffic on the bases that necessitated some of that. So I would say he's still a clear five. Love what he's doing, but he's number five. I would put Miller at a clear four. Mm-hmm. Again, no shot at him, but I think you see a team with a really good plan can get to him still as
Atlanta
he's
will tonight,
more.
Right? I mean, Atlanta's going to have that kind of lineup tonight with that same bunch of veterans in it and a lot of power in it.
And on the first three, oh my God.
Yeah.
I mean, like, the first three are just, it right now, in such a zone that they could do just about anything.
I mean, it really is remarkable, right? I mean, you could turn to any of these stats and any of these numbers and everything else, but just in the simplicity of this conversation of, you know, looking for an ace and looking for the number one and how many times, Salk, over 15 years and into the development of this program, the drafting of this program, the number of years ago where you looked at the big three that were all sitting there in the minor leagues with Taijuan Walker and Holtzen and wondering like, okay, can these guys grow into that? Can we have a few aces on it and sit here right now? Not only is he envy of the league, something Jerry told us last year, something Passan has reiterated, but you legitimately, those guys, all three of them are legit number ones. And Bryce Miller, it could be a legit number two on a lot of clubs right now.
Yeah, this is nicely stated from Idaho 208. Aces over Kings, full house. The pitching rotation right now, three aces, two Kings. You know what's crazy about it is you got another wild card right now in AAA who's doing its thing, hasn't allowed a run in his first two starts back, is going to have to take one more at 85 pitches or so, and then we'll see.
So if this
My
were,
guess is they'll give him at least one more after that because why?
Yeah, unless somebody falls apart.
Why force him back 1 second earlier than you need to?
But I am curious to see what they do. You know, just like we had the conversation with Brady earlier about what does the extra defensive lineman mean for the defensive line room in Seattle. And in my mind, I think it means that we're going to see Dre Jones on the outside a little more, but we'll find out. What are you going to do if everything kind of stays the same and Brian Wu's ready to go?
Well, if this were August and not April, and it is April and it is not August, so this is not a realistic conversation. This is just a total hypothetical and out there. But if this were August, would you be looking at Wu taking a brass role?
No.
Would you be looking at Wu and saying, oh my gosh, okay, if this were August and we are in a playoff push or we're in a pennant chase and we can win this division, you're in the exact same, we're a game and a half up, there's going to be no brash.
Yep.
Does Wu not bring that same ridiculous stuff out of the bullpen?
Brock, you're speaking my language, and every fiber of my being thinks the same thing. And from everything I know about Brian Wu, the Mariners organization, and the way they think about him and that topic, there is no chance that they will do that because of his arm and his health and where he's been and what he's done in the past. He's never, never pitched out of the pen ever in his career. And I don't just mean in the big league level. That's not who he is. He's not done it. Bryce Miller's done it a little bit. Mm-hmm. And I remember asking this last year, like, hey, if you needed to, would you move one of those guys to the pen after the Seawald trade and everything else? And they said, well, we'd think about it at least with Miller because he's done it before. Brian Wu had never done it, and the injury concern with him, and who knows how he bounces back from that, and how often you could use him.
Just for the exercise, then, whose stuff translates better out of the
Brian Wu's. It's no doubt. Brian Wu would be a phenomenal reliever if that were the direction that they wanted to take it. But
pitchers are creatures of habit.
You can't do it.
Yeah.
There's too much fragility, and I think there's too much risk there right now, but... Oh my God, can you imagine with that slider and that arm angle? He would be a ridiculous option for one inning. He'd be unbelievable.
Yeah, I think we don't see all the work those relievers do all year.
Mm-hmm.
And you can see Matt Brash last year having 79 appearances, which led all of Major League Baseball. You don't even see the other times he ramped up and didn't go in the game. Like last night, Mooney was getting himself ready. If there was something that happened there in the eighth inning or, you know, ninth inning, if they could, and he never went into the game. So you're like, well, he didn't pitch that day. No, he ramped himself up and got himself ready. So the wear and the tear and the demand on those guys down in the pen is pretty darn extraordinary.
Yeah, I think it is. Now, you know, again, Wu comes back. He's better than Hancock is, I think. And so he probably jumps back into the rotation. I don't see Hancock going to the pen at that point. My guess is he goes back to AAA, and it's unfortunate, but that's just kind of where you're at. And because he'll be needed eventually as well. That's just the nature of the season. And I don't know how many times we've had these conversations before where you're like, what are you going to do when so-and-so comes back? And guess what?
Yeah.
It always seems to work out.
It
always seems to just find a way of working out. Trade value for Hancock, asked the 360. No thanks. Not interested in dealing any of my pitching. You will continue to need at least six starters over the course of this season. That's just the way this game works. Let's rank.
Got a list? Time to put it in order.
Fred Dwarmfor's house. Top five meals that I have ever had.
This is Ranked.
To be honest, that list was really biased.
Every morning at 9:45 on Brock and Salk.
Top 10 list. I'm not buying it.
Ranked.
All right, Brock is ranking today. There are 8 new Seahawks draft picks, and Brock's going to tell us who they are in order.
I'm not even going to go through the three honorable mentions. You can figure those out. It's pretty,
pretty easy. There's only three of those. I'm not even going to mention those guys. You got to mention them.
Okay. Brady said that Mike Jarrell was a great interview. He was the final pick of the 8 out of Findlay University or University of Findlay or Findlay U or who knows. couldn't find much about him. Wasn't invited to the combine or the senior
Findlay's
bowl.
In Ohio.
Appreciate
I was
going to
ask
that.
Where
Thank
it was.
You. I did a little research
University
on that.
Of Findlay.
Yeah. It's in Ohio. Yeah.
He's a good athlete, though. I mean, he's not one of these just, you know, big, huge, odd-looking. Remember some of the guys they brought to rookie minicamp over the year? No. This guy's a good athlete, but just unbelievably raw. So he's an honorable mention. I'm going to give Nehemiah Pritchett, even though we're going through the book of Nehemiah right now, and I like Nehemiah a lot, and I love the name. I'm going to put Nehemiah Pritchett on my honorable mention list as well. And then so is the guy that just wasn't in cell phone range. I'm sorry. If it's the draft and you're a possible draft pick,
wow.
You know what you have to do? You have to be available. So what have I always talked about? The greatest ability is?
Availability.
And when you're out of cell phone range and you're pissing off the GM because he can't get a hold of you, and he's having to yell at his personnel people, call his agent! At least call his agent. Where is this guy? You have got to get yourself in cell phone range, my friend.
Mm.
So for that, Mr. Knight is also on my honorable mention list.
Wow.
All right. Yep,
that's the way it goes.
Those three. Okay. Yep, those so that three. Leaves five.
That leaves five.
That
number
leaves five.
Number five, DJ James, cornerback, Auburn University, down on the plains, War Eagle. And I'll be honest with you. The only reason he's number five, and it's not Nehemiah Pritchett, because they're two similar guys. They both can run. Nehemiah, the fourth fastest 40. DJ, the eighth fastest 40. He's a 4.4 guy. He can fly. Was because, well, basically, I like the exchange on the call with the scouts, and in particular with Carl Scott, the DB coach. Here was the Seahawks reaching out, making that call to DJ James, letting him know in the sixth round he was a Seahawk.
What's up, coach?
Not much, man. What's going on with you, man?
You know you just got a dog, right?
Is that right? Is that right?
Oh, yeah. They got a dog.
Well, you know what they say. You know what they say, man. I see better than I hear now, so you're going to have to show me now.
Yes, sir. All right. You know I got.
Wow. Shut up. Basically what he said. All right, we'll see.
Oh, do I? Oh, I got a dog, do I? Oh,
yeah,
really?
Yeah, we'll see about that. That's funny. Great response. Yeah.
I don't know why I like that
see
one.
See better
so
than
much.
I hear? That's the kind of response you get from a coach. The guy's been coaching a long time.
Uh-huh. Yeah, don't tell me about what you are. Your tape showed me what you are. You're a six-round pick. You are 175 pounds. And you're going to have to come in here, and you are going to have to fight and claw for everything. He will be interesting, right, in this whole corner conversation, because he would be more of a nickel, right? He'd be more of a traditional when you're that size, because we saw Trey Brown, right, when you put a big receiver out there, right, and you isolate those guys maybe in a three-by-one.
Maybe they'll actually use their number five overall pick to play outside.
Maybe, or maybe he'll be a nickel too, but I like that exchange right there. I'm a dog. Okay, number four. It's pretty low on my list, and this is probably, again, very, very biased.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going Christian Haynes. He was their second pick. He was 81 overall, and I don't know. This is maybe a UConn bias, and it's totally unfair to him, and he could do nothing about it. Played for a terrible program and a terrible place as far as football goes. Great at basketball school, but not a lot of help around him, not a lot of support, and he's had to fight for everything. He had a great Senior Bowl. He is a physical, physical dude. What do you have on Christian Haynes there for me, Justin?
I like the guys that knock him off the ball. That's me. You know, so we kind of figure out the rest later. But I think Christian brings that to the table. So that's the first thing I'm looking for.
Next guys knock him off the ball.
You hear that term, heavy hands. I kind of like that. It's like Wreck-Em Ralph. It's just like that dude hits you and you just, right? It's like your hamstring when you ran. It just goes, it just pops. And those guys, when they come off the ball and they just, and they just pop like Salky's hamstring. That's what Haynes does with his hand. So he's number four on my list. No fault of his own, but probably a little UConn bias. Number three, this again is my bias, but give me Big Laumea. Give me the big boy out of Utah. He comes from a big family, Salk. I think he's one of 10 kids. He played on a familial offensive line out there at Utah where they care for one another, where they were the heartbeat of the team. I did three of their games last year. Point blank, Kyle Whittingham, right? Lots of injuries, issues with the quarterback. Oh, but the heartbeat of our team is our O-line. And the heartbeat of that O-line was Laumea. And I kind of like this commentary about him.
I'll probably say moving a person from point A to point B is the most fun part. That's what I mean by physicality. Because we got to move grown men and they're not going to let us. So I feel like I don't care and I'm willing to do my job. So I want to do my job. And you said about finishing. I do finish. I need to be better with being more consistent with that. But that's what I want to show in Seattle. So, I would say I am a pretty physical in that way, trying to move people off the ball and trying to finish them.
You know, it's really difficult to do, Salk, at the NFL level, move grown men off the ball. It's really hard because they're the best of the best. You're not getting to play Arizona State or Colorado or Stanford or Cal. Like, you're playing grown men. And I do vividly remember the great Tom Lavott, O-line coach, when I was a rookie in Seattle, and that first mini camp, and talking about that, like, okay, all you All you big tough guys from college that could bury people and pancake people and everything else, that's not what this league's about. It is about knocking them back. But can you knock them back 6 inches? Can you knock them back a foot and not get yourself knocked back? This guy's got a lot of horsepower and a lot of viciousness in his game. Number two on my list, I think Seahawks fans, and they've always had a tender spot for tight ends. They've always liked him, from John Carlson. Jeremy Stevens had a great run. Jimmy was a little complicated. Jimmy Graham was a little bit tough for Seahawks fans, but we've always liked our tight ends. And A.J. Barner, number two on my list, he brings a whole bunch of resume to the table.
I'm a football player. If you ask me to go out there and catch 10 passes a game, I'll go do that. If you go ask me to, you know, man up the C-gap and, you know, be physical, I'll go do that. If you ask me to play on every special team, I'll go do that. I love strapping up the helmet. I love playing physical football. And this has been my dream since I've been a kid, so it's what I love to do.
Did A.J. Barner stay at Indiana? I don't think he's a fourth-round pick. I don't think he's taken ahead of Cade Stover and some of these other tight ends. The fact that he bet on himself, he went to Michigan in a loaded tight end room, by the way, and loaded four-star and five-star tight end recruits, and he went in there and he earned his way into a predominant role with that team, and the familiarity with the Harbaughs and the rest of this Michigan staff that is here. I don't know, man. He's 6'6". He's athletic. He can catch it. He can block. He knows how to strain. I like that pick at number two. And that obviously leaves the number one of ones, man, who joined us on Friday, 9 o'clock, after not much sleep, after a whole big celebration, talking about, that is, Byron Murphy, his role here in Seattle.
I feel like, you know, it's very similar, but I feel like, you know, in Seattle, you know, they let you go, you know, so they you know, no more just reading. They just let you go, just blow and go. So I feel like, you know, that's the best scheme, you know, and the best fit for me. And then, you know, D-line coach also said he see me as a three tech, you know, and I love the three. You know, I could play the three. So, you know, and I've been doing it for years. So, yeah.
Blow and go. So that's what we're doing. Blow and go. Two little ranks right there.
Blown up
right there today.
Blown up
ghosts.
Ghosts.
I forgot about that already.
I will tell you, Brock, it's a good list. I'm a little bummed that you left my guy out. I kind of like this Tyrese Knight. I don't know. I just have a feeling. It's a gut feeling thing. Gut feeling about Tyrese Knight that he's going to surprise us and end up being like one of the players from this draft class where you're like, man, they got to steal.
I sure hope so.
Just a gut feeling. I have, you know, just something about taking and reaching for him in that spot makes me think that they saw something specific that they liked. I've been wrong about that before. That's for darn sure. And maybe I will be again. Just a gut feeling.
I hope you are right.
I hope I am too. That'd be fun. Fun when I'm right.
See you at Barkin Park tonight.
You gonna cheer for Jared tonight when he steps in the box?
I'll be there tomorrow. Yeah, sure. Yeah. Why not?
Just for fun. Little golf club.
Yeah, just a little.
I think I'm not gonna take the Francona approach at this one.
I'm gonna give him that little laugh that he gave to me a couple years ago. All right, we gotta go. Stick around for Bump and Stacy. Their draft reaction. Everything else is coming up next. We'll see you guys tomorrow morning at 6 a.m. Until then, the hey.
AJ Nabarmar.
See everybody.
Guys, it's a chopper!